Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the May 8, 2016 session, focusing on John 17, verses 20 through 26. 1. I'm David Cassidy, and I'm joined for this episode by our good friends Daniel Glaze, Nikki Hardiman, and Burt Montgomery. How are you guys doing this evening?
Doing great.
Good. How are you?
Hello, everybody.
Now, Burt, you know, we have a Google Doc that we actually share and kind of allows us to gather some thoughts ahead of recording. And we started throwing around ideas for titles that, you know, were connected to songs that we remembered that somehow we thought had a connection to the text. And so, Burt, as our resident pop culture expert, can you give us an introduction to this text?
Well, I'd love to. And I'd love to start by quoting from the Gospel of John, who says, "You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. And I hope someday you'll join us and the world will live as one."
Now, that's I say what
John the
there.
Beetle, not John the disciple.
Nice. See.
But that text came to mind. "You may say I'm a dreamer. I hope one day you'll join us. The world will live as one." When I was thinking of the text, and the text from the actual Gospel of John, sorry if I offended anyone, 17:20 through 26. And, you know, the Gospel of John is a mystical type gospel. There's a lot of spiritual union kind of stuff going on. And it's not a very straight doctrinal approach, rational approach to our faith. It's very experiential. And in this text, Jesus is praying. This is before his crucifixion. It's one of the last things he's doing with his disciples. And we the readers or the hearers, are privy to a prayer of Jesus. And Jesus is praying for his disciples. He's praying for the world, and he's praying for us. And so we listen in, and Jesus says, "I ask not only on behalf of these," we assume his disciples, "but also on behalf of those who will believe in me through their word." I assume that means all of us 2,000 years later. Jesus says, "I ask you," he's talking to God, "that they all may be one. As you, my Father, are in me, and I am in you, may they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me." And he keeps, it just kind of gets all this wordy stuff going on, but then he keeps coming back. "So that you are in me, I'm in you, and that we are all together." Wait, that's the Beatles again. but that we are all one. And that theme just keeps coming back and coming back, that Jesus is God, God is in Jesus, and that the followers and all of the believers and all of us together and the world is in him. And I was thinking about that so much and what to do with this. And there's a story from Thomas Merton. If you're familiar, if you've ever been to Louisville, Kentucky, the first thing you want to do is you want to go to Wick's Pizza on Bardstown Road. Incredible, incredible pizza. But then the next thing you want to do is you want to go to the corner of 4th and what is now Muhammad Ali, because he's from Louisville. But 4th and what used to be Walnut Street. And there's a plaque right there, a big monument right there on the corner, because Thomas Merton had an epiphany right there. He had withdrawn from the world. He had given himself to the world as a young man and all of its pleasures, and then withdrew from the world into the monastery at the Abbey of Gethsemane, south of Louisville. We say Louisville down here in Mississippi. Sorry, Louisville. There is actually a Louisville, Mississippi, about 20 minutes from where I am. Louisville, Kentucky. And for about 20 or 30 minutes from Louisville, Kentucky is where this abbey was. And he started going back into town some. He had dental problems, so he had to go see a dentist. And at one day, he's standing in the middle of downtown Louisville with all the hustle and all the bustle of all these people and the crowd and the hectic busyness of life that he had fled from. And he says he stood there in the center of the shopping district, and he writes, "And I was suddenly overwhelmed with the realization that I loved all these people, that they were mine and I theirs, that we could not be alien to one another, even though we were total strangers. It was like waking up from a dream of separateness, of self-isolation in a special world. And he talks about how the joy he felt at that moment of simply being human, a member of the race in which God himself had become incarnate. I can't help but think that that's the kind of thing that Jesus is getting to in this text, that somehow with all of our differences, with all of our cultural differences and our ethnic differences and our religious differences and political differences, our nationality differences and economic differences, that somehow Jesus is praying to God that one day we will all realize that we're somehow still connected just as he is connected to God, maybe tying in that whole idea that we're all created in the image of God, so that as the image of God is in all of us, and then God is in us, and but that we would all be one, which brings me back to a different Paul Hewson, otherwise known as Bono from U2, and the great song simply called One. With this theme, this song that keeps coming back at the end, this chorus, one life with each other, sisters, brothers, one life, but we're not the same, but we get to carry each other, one. I have no idea if that's where you want to go with this text, but that's what I thought of when reading this text.
Amen. Bert, I don't know if that was as much Bible background as it was sermon.
Bert, you are the
spirit. Spirit led. It was no Bible background.
No, I think there was some there.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, you learned from our podcast last week and were led by the Spirit. That was.
That's right.
Well, and what I find so challenging about this, you're right. Jesus does his language is a little convoluted here, but he keeps coming back to this. They may be one, completely one, and he's speaking this to his disciples, and we, his modern day disciples, are among the most fractured people that may be on earth. I mean, we have. I'm a Baptist. We have more kinds of Baptists than you can shake a stick at. What does this mean for us to be one? Does it mean denomination sees? Well, I don't know that. I do know that we who call ourselves followers of Christ have a lot of work to do in order to live out his prayer that we all be one. I know I've got work to do there.
I just keep singing Bono in my head.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
Well, I mean, I think that part of what the issue that I hear you raising, Daniel, is this, there are obvious differences, right? I mean, you put three of us together, you're going to get four different opinions about just about anything. Hence this podcast. No.
exactly.
But I mean, I don't think that this call for unity is a call for conformity, right? I mean,
it's not to gloss over
our differences, but to be unified in spite of or in addition to our uniquenesses, maybe is where it's going. Every time I read content out of the Gospel of John, I mean, we get interesting kinds of wordings, right? I mean, if the first chapter of John is very well known, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and he was in the beginning with God. And we hear this stuff in our, it's weird kind of talk, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, who talks like this?
No, yeah.
and it feels kind of like that in this passage as well, right? Where he gets into these, they're not completely repetitions, but
Yeah.
But almost creating formulas of thought that we might try to chart out, and I think it's good to be reminded that in their day the influence of Hellenistic thought was very strong, that, and Hellenistic thought being the influence of Greek philosophy. And of course, there were lots of Greek philosophers, and they didn't all agree on anything. But prominent among those was this fellow named Plato. You know, Plato was, Daniel, like what you were talking about, where we have, there's obvious uniqueness across and differences, right? But we seek after and we seem to value, right, a sense of unity in it. Other Plato and other philosophers looked at the world and they saw lots of different things, but they also saw unity in that, right? So to put it coarsely, you know, looked out there and saw horses, right? And not all the horses are alike. They're different. Some horses are bigger than others. They're colored differently. They behave differently, but we know they're all horses. What's this unifying factor across them? And so Plato ends up, you know, speculating that we really live in this shadowy world that is imperfect, and that there is this other realm that is perfect. And there exists the perfect horse, of which all of these others are merely shadows. They are imperfect shadows. But if we could see that perfect world, we'd see the perfect horse. Well, if you think about that kind of dualism where there's this perfect realm and the shadowy realm, we live in the shadowy realm. And then you read a lot of the Gospel of John, you can't help but hear him speaking to an audience that's probably well-versed in those thoughts. And so this call for unity really shatters a lot of that, right? It's saying you, what's it, verse 22, the glory that you have given me, I have given them so that they may be one as we are one. Wow. I mean, that's not possible in Plato's thought.
Hmm. Right. That's really helpful, David. I like the horse analogy. It's very helpful to have an understanding of who John is speaking to. So what I can hear the pushback being is that in our world today, we can't perfectly be as one. So of course there is this perfect realm where the perfect unity exists, and that can't exist here. But that's not what this text is suggesting, I don't think.
No.
I think this text opens up the possibility,
yeah,
that it can exist, that we can find ways to be unified in spite of our differences, and maybe even because of our differences.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I can hear the pushback. That's
possible.
I mean, yes. Because it happened in my head, like it was kind of like, but we can't have that perfect here, you know, but
yeah.
And I may never get invited back after this.
You're always welcome, Bert.
Well, some of the listeners may, don't let me. Just make sure you send your emails to me directed at davidcassidy@faithlab.com. You know, Merton, when he died in 68, he was at a retreat, a conference or some type of get together of various mystical monks and prayers and stuff. Buddhists were there. He was there. I think some other Catholic monks were there. And they were experiencing together and trying to find their common, what is it that's beyond their language? What is it that is beyond their understanding, beyond their words, at the core of what they get to when they meditate, when they pray? And they began to sense a connection with one another, that they were one, even though their traditions, if you really got down into the nitty-gritty of their traditions, they may not agree on a lot of things, but strip away all the differences. When they got down to the core of their praying and listening, he felt that connection with them, that they were one. When I read this prayer of Jesus to God for all of us, it speaks to me of the image of God that is in me, and the image of God that is in you, and the image of God that is in all of God's children.
Bert, I think you're on to something here that for me, and I'm maybe a little slow on the draw, but what I'm hearing is that so often we think that they may be one is equivalent of saying that they may all be the same.
Right.
And that's not the case. Being one is not the same as being the same. We you know, it and transcending doctrinal differences, transcending different ways of worship, doesn't make those unimportant. It just means that we can be one despite that which makes us different. And that's what I hear Jesus saying here, almost calling us to rise above the pettiness with which we seek to divide ourselves, black, white, rich, poor, gay, straight, whatever the case may be. It doesn't mean those distinctions are unimportant, but when it comes to whether we recognize the image of God in our brother and sister, we can transcend. And it sounds like, David, that's what John was asking his Hellenistic listeners to transcend, that dualism, yeah, sacred profane dichotomy there.
Yeah, to set it aside and go beyond it. One of my principles that I believe in is that if you have a group of people who don't seem to be together or unified, or, you know, very well, and you want to help them grow together, give them a task.
Yes.
Find something to do together.
Sure. Yeah.
And when you start building something or making something, there are problems to solve. There are things to get done. It's amazing how the ideological differences that so often, you know, that are, those things go away. And instead, mm-hmm, we're all just trying to, you know, bring the lumber in or get the paintbrushes going or, you know, whatever it is we're doing together. There's a sense of unity that comes out of that, that transcends all these differences. Mm-hmm. And everybody that's part of that, you know, usually can feel that sort of thing. I don't know. Maybe being called to task together is a part of discovering unity.
Yeah. So Bono and you two are right, right? We get to carry each other. You got to do something together, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
We're all one. We're not the same, but we get to carry each other.
Yeah. One, but not the same. That sounds scriptural. I mean, is that, it was a couple weeks ago, perhaps, on our podcast, Aaron Robinson Hall was a guest, and she was talking about how at the Islamic Center near where she lives, I think was vandalized with some mm-hmm painting or something.
Yeah.
And how she was so moved by some Christian response to that, coming to the Islamic Center and protecting the folks as they came to worship.
Right.
And in that moment, I'm projecting because we didn't get into the oneness, but I would suspect she felt a oneness with her Islamic brothers and sisters there. Mm-hmm. She did not cease being Christian. They did not cease being Muslim.
No.
But,
right,
but you know, one but not the same. It sounds paradox, but it's not.
Somehow you've got to get past all the noise. And we recognize and embrace the difference, but at the core, you could still accept one another, even if we don't understand how, but we can still accept one another, that God calls us to love love each other as one.
You know, I think that, Daniel, earlier you talked about all of the division, even within the Christian church, all the different denominations, and I think we oftentimes find ourselves splitting on belief, right? On,
yeah,
a belief,
yeah,
about how we do something, a belief about how we understand Jesus or baptism or communion or whatever is the presenting issue. We split, we divide on belief. I think that the inability to find unity with the people that we have split with, I think that when violence becomes a part of that division, is when we equate who we are with what we believe.
Yes.
But the reality is, and I think that Christian scripture upholds this, is that our identity is that each human being is a child of God.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that if we find ourselves equating what we believe or what somebody else believes with who they are and what their worth is, then we are missing the mark, because that creates this kind of an inability to connect with that other person. And I think that if we can look at somebody who has very different beliefs than us and acknowledge that they too are a child of God, that God loves them just as God loves me. And when we can let their identity be more important than what either one of us believes, then we figured something out. But I think it's really hard for us right now to do that.
Well, we've elevated belief to our God. Belief itself has become our idol.
Yeah, I mean, what is more fundamental to our faith as people of faith? Is it doctrine and belief, or is it relationship? I mean, we preach that relationship with Christ and with one another,
right.
Mm-hmm. is at the heart of who we say we are and the life we want to live. And so if that is the case, and I think it is, then that doesn't mean doctrine and belief is unimportant again.
Right.
But it does mean that maybe relationship is more important. And I think we're just too quick to break fellowship. Now, there may be good times to break fellowship.
Sure.
But I mean, I'm reminded of the old joke. You've heard about the guy who's stranded on a desert island for years, and he's finally rescued. And someone says, well, show me around the island. He says, well, here's my house. And here's my church. I built a church. He goes, that's great. You built yourself a little church. What's that building over there? And he says, oh, that's the church I used to go to. And yeah, I'm reminded, you know, sometimes we break fellowship too often.
All right. I'm not a C.S. Lewis scholar, and it's been a long time since I've read The Chronicles of Narnia, but the last book called The Last Battle. David, you know what I'm going to say?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, and I'm going to get this wrong. So one of you guys remind me, and I don't have it close by. Guys here being a generic, neutral, non-sexist term.
I love your disclaimers.
Anyway, but in the last battle, somebody from the other side, from the enemy that they had all been fighting, ends up in the big tent. It's a whatever afterwards when they know they're dead and they're with Aslan and with God, and they're saying, how did he get in here? And Aslan said, well, because he was fighting on the other side. He says, well, he was on the other side because of where he was born, how he was raised, the language he used, and all that stuff. But all that doesn't matter. His heart was always with me. And then there are some people that aren't in there that were on their side, and his heart wasn't, their hearts weren't with me, you know? And that to me is just pure gospel. I mean, that Jesus says that over and over and over again, right? I've got sheep that are of this flock. I've got, you know, you judge by the outside and by the appearance, and I judge, God judges by the heart. And what is it? What is that? It's love, right? Love your neighbor, love yourself, do unto others. There's no greater, what does Paul say? Nothing greater than love. Anything else, you can have all the right doctrine in the world. So you get, and God is love, 1 John, right? So you get all that down to it. That to me was an eye-opening thing. When I read that so long ago, it was like, wow. And then I began listening to George Harrison, All Things Must Pass, which is too old for most folks listening probably, which I thought was one of the greatest Christian albums ever made. It spoke to me so deeply because of its purity of heart and knowing God. And it's not unlike reading some prayers of the Christian mystics from old. And then that kind of got to that idea of what's in the heart versus the outside, and the language is the outside. And I'll stop preaching again. I get going on this stuff. Sorry.
Well, no, you know, it's funny. Like, I'm sitting here thinking about listening to what you're saying, and it occurs to me, I know several churches right now who are, you know, I might be, you know, heading toward meddling right now, but I know a lot of churches right now who are struggling and in conflict, quite frankly, because of the decision the Supreme Court made this summer. And all of a sudden, it might be that, you know, this conversation on homosexuality and the church, it might be that it is the real issue in the church. And I think sometimes it's a presenting issue that is being scapegoated as an issue for other conflicts in the church.
Yeah.
And every person is going to have their own way that they understand this and what they believe about it. But but that's a very real thing that I think a lot of our churches across denominations, across theological lines, are dealing with and having to answer questions about and have conversations about. And I think that a text like this could be very helpful when a church, whatever the issue is, finds themselves in conflict. That if we can find a way to come together as one, no matter what you believe or I believe, then we can figure out how to live together and how to be together. And it might even be, Daniel, like you said, that sometimes there is a reason to split because whatever it is that you're talking about, you can't kind of be together because you believe so differently, but it doesn't have to be harmful. And I just know that I've seen a lot of people hurt in the last 8 months. I've seen lives quite injured because of things people have said. I've seen tears in church meetings. I have seen anguish over what's going to happen. I've had phone calls from friends who don't know how to navigate those waters at their churches. And I think when we let what we believe about some issue become more important than our brother and sister who's sitting with us in church, then we are missing the mark. And when we are causing harm in the life of somebody else over some issue, we are not following in the footsteps of Christ.
Well, I am comforted often by, I think the Christian sense of humility is a good place to be, in that God is able to make judgments about who belongs and who's valuable and what's best, and I don't have to make those judgments. In fact, it's better if I don't. And so I take comfort in the passages that call us to pretty simple actions, kind of like, Nikki, you've said in the past that, you know, a lot of times the things we tell our children are really the things we ought to really focus on. And this idea, like Bert was saying, you know, that we are called to love. We are called to carry each other. You know, maybe that's enough for us, and to let God deal with these more complex, difficult issues, as Jesus did when Jesus was here, you know, because Jesus certainly was open to those who were outcast by society or by the establishment of the church, or excuse me, of the, you know, the religious bodies of the time. Maybe we sometimes need to free ourselves of needing to do those things for God. God's completely capable of doing that God's self. And that's a good thing. So I hope for all of us to find some good things to do to help us to find unity as we work together to bring about you know, God's kingdom in this place. Thank you for this good and hard conversation.
Thanks, David.
Thanks. Thank you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.